Good morning, everyone. My name is Linda Schack, as Gretchen mentioned, and I'm from an organization called Prevention Institute. We're a national nonprofit organization located in Oakland, California. And for those who are unfamiliar, our founder and executive director, Larry Cohen, founded Prevention Institute 14 years ago when he was working as the director of prevention for a public health department in California in Contra Costa County. And when he looked across not only his own health department and county, but really across the country, he saw that no matter what public health issue people were working on, traffic safety, violence, healthy eating, physical activity, tobacco, that often when people say, oh, we're working on prevention, the things they were working on were coming too late. You know, we're working on violence prevention, we've got police out on the street, or we're working on diabetes prevention and we're handing out brochures around diabetes. And while those things are important, he really wanted to answer the question, how do we keep people from getting sick and injured in the first place? And the answer to that for him was really community prevention, looking at the places where people live and work and play and learn, and making sure that those were conducive to people being healthy and making healthy choices. And so over the past 14 years, leadership development has been critically important for us because we're really trying to build momentum for primary prevention and working with local health departments, state health departments, community collaboratives, foundations to work on community prevention. I wanted to mention that I have no financial relationships and with commercial interests relevant to this presentation. And as we begin to talk about leadership development, I want to share an aha moment I had about leadership development in public health that actually comes from a previous job position I had many years ago when I worked in youth development. And this is a group of youth that I worked with in San Francisco, California, my hometown. And the youth, I was running a leadership development program for youth, and they were charged with picking a topic of significance to youth today, spending an entire summer learning about that topic, and at the end of the summer doing a project on it. And they chose healthy eating and physical activity for youth. And their end of the summer project was going to be a health carnival for kids younger than themselves, teaching them about how fun it was to eat healthy and move more. They'd gotten jump ropes donated so they could, you know, jump rope with the kids, and we're going to prepare a healthy meal. And a day or so before they were set to launch their health carnival, one of the youth raised her hand, and Hien was a 17-year-old recent immigrant from Vietnam. And she said, you know, we've been learning about this topic all summer, and there's something I just don't understand. How come, from my country, where I come from, all poor people can afford is fruits and vegetables? And in this country, poor people can't afford fruits and vegetables. And it was a huge aha moment for the youth. And then that went even further when one of the young people raised his hand and said, you know, I live in the community where we're doing the health carnival, and my parents have to drive across town to go grocery shopping. There isn't a grocery store in our community. And so this aha moment for the youth was that they really needed to move upstream. And moving upstream, many of us in public health are familiar with this concept, and I think it's, you know, best captured by this quote from Gloria Steinem: we're still standing on the bank of the river rescuing people who are drowning. We have not gone to the head of the river to keep them from falling in. And that is the 21st century task. And in a way, that's really become the 21st century task for public health. How do we move upstream to keep people from getting sick or injured in the first place? And that is one of the core pieces of work Prevention Institute does. We provide training and consultation across the country, and most recently have been working with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's Communities Putting Prevention to Work initiative, which was funded through stimulus for communities to work on policy around healthy eating, physical activity, and tobacco, and ensure that people's communities were healthier places for people to live. And as we've been working with communities, there's been a real sense of urgency and interest in how do we better prepare ourselves? How do we as county health departments, how do we as local collaboratives better prepare ourselves to be competitive as future funding becomes available for community prevention, and also to continue and to build our capacity to do this work with or without funding. And these groups were asking this question at an important time because at that time the Affordable Care Act was being passed. And for the first time we have a federal investment of $15 billion over 10 years for a prevention and wellness trust. And this was hugely significant because when we look at the past and our past healthcare expenditures, of the $2.2 trillion being spent on healthcare, only 4% of that was going to prevention. So this $15 billion over 10 years is pretty significant. And at the same time, when we look at the places where people are going to school, this is a common scene. We might see communities such as the one my youth was talking about where there isn't a grocery store and instead we see a burned out supermarket in one's community. And community conditions that make it difficult to walk. So community prevention is extremely important. And we like to talk at Prevention Institute about the environment and health. And oftentimes when people talk about the environment, they're familiar with toxins in the air and the water and soil and how that impacts health. But what we're also talking about at Prevention Institute is the environment and the places where people are living and going to school and working and how that shapes behavior and in turn how that shapes one's health. The Institute of Medicine has even said that it is unreasonable to expect that people will change their behavior easily when there are so many forces in the social, cultural, and physical environment that conspire against such change. And so prevention becomes the prescription, and particularly quality prevention is the prescription. So we developed the Community Prevention Readiness Assessment to really help communities think about how they can really prepare themselves to work on community prevention and to show to funders that they're ready, willing, and able to do it. We really identified six core areas, and we identified these areas based on our experience working with communities over the past 14 years as trainers, as consultants, providing strategic planning, and also from our own work engaging in community prevention, the advocacy that we've done in our state of California and the advocacy that we've done federally. And most recently, by working with these Communities Putting Prevention to Work, or CPPW grantees, we've really seen these in action. So I want to share a little bit what I mean by each of these. The first is about coordination and collaboration. St. John's Well Child and Family Center is in South Los Angeles, and they serve a low-income population in South LA. And they were seeing patients coming into the clinic with high levels of lead poisoning, insect bites, cockroaches in their ears. And rather than just treating the problem, they realized, hey, something is going on here, and particularly around substandard housing. And so they joined forces with a tenants' rights organization, the local housing agency, a human rights group, to develop a strategic plan around housing conditions in South LA that included community engagement, medical care, health education, advocacy, and litigation. And through coordination and collaboration, they were able to change administrative policies to ensure that landlords were adhering to certain housing conditions. Additionally, the clinic became served a surveillance role after that. So when they would see people coming in to the healthcare center, they were able to see what was going on, report you know, make reports around substandard housing, and not only collect health data, but really important environmental data. So we see how coordination and collaboration both in really improve the health of people in South LA, and it really required the healthcare agency saying, you know, we have a role that goes beyond just serving patients, but really looking at, on a broader scale, what's going on. We also see from this example how interdisciplinary partnerships played a key role. And we work with a lot of communities that are interested in really working across sector, and this is our collaboration multiplier tool. I won't go too much into it, but we see a lot of communities doing a lot deeper thinking now, and a lot of state and local health departments saying, how do we partner with other agencies, both within and with outside government, to identify what are the different assets that we bring to a collaborative effort, and what does that mean for how we work together? In Bartholomew County, which is in Indiana, they're a CPPW recipient, and they have really forged a strong interdisciplinary partnership with their local Chamber of Commerce. And we see here Jack Hess, the Chamber of Commerce president, saying, the bottom line is this. A healthy community is one in which communities want to locate, businesses want to grow and expand, and the best workforce in the world wants to live. And how significant is that to have someone from business, someone from the Chamber of Commerce, saying how important a healthy community is? We who work in public health, we're used to saying that, and people are used to hearing that from us. But when we have the Chamber of Commerce saying that, it takes on a whole different level. The next piece of quality community prevention is taking a comprehensive approach. This is Prevention Institute's Spectrum of Prevention tool, which really acknowledges that prevention requires a multifaceted level of activities. And then when we're working on prevention, we really should be ensuring that our efforts focus on each and every one of these levels in order to create a comprehensive strategy and comprehensive change. And that particularly focusing on policy and organizational practice changes, which oftentimes get forgotten, are critically important. The next piece of quality prevention is leadership, having high-level leadership engaged in our efforts. Boston is a Communities Putting Prevention to Work initiative. And last spring, the mayor stood on the steps of City Hall and stated that they would be banning the sale of sugar and sweetened beverages in all city facilities. The very next day, a healthcare administrator at Kearney Hospital stood on the front steps of the hospital and said, the mayor just made this proclamation, we're doing the same thing. No longer will we be selling sugar sweetened beverages in our hospital. And then a leader from a local community-based organization wrote a letter to all other major institutions in the Boston area, letting them know what the mayor had done, what the hospital had done, and encouraging them to follow suit. So here we see a high-level leadership engaged from both healthcare, from community-based organizations, and from government. And that is a real important aspect of being able to be effective in our community prevention efforts. The next element is health equity. And I think we'd be missing something if we did not acknowledge that many of the poor health outcomes and the inequities we see in health are due to the inequities in community environments and poor public policies that have really created a disinvestment in low-income communities and communities of color over many, many years. And that when we're working on community prevention, we must ensure that our efforts are reaching the communities most in need. In Seattle, King County, they are recipients of CPPW, and actually very similar to Cook County, Illinois, have done re-granting to community-based organizations to really build the capacity of community organizations to do this work, to really acknowledge that there needs to be an engagement and investment of community residents, and that this work, you know, really sort of seeding this work so it can continue beyond the life of the initiative and really sit in the community. And the last element is capacity building. As a technical assistance provider for Communities Putting Prevention Communities Putting Prevention to Work, which is a 2-year initiative, which was a really short amount of time to do this work. A lot of people have been saying we've been building the ship while we're sailing it. So when I saw this quote, I really liked it because it sort of built on that ship idea. If you want to build a ship, don't drum up people to collect wood and don't assign them tasks and work, but rather teach them to long for the endless immensity of the sea. And I can't stress enough how important, when we're working on community prevention, to build the capacity of the staff within our health departments, of the community-based groups that we work with, of partners in other sectors, is because once a grant ends, we really want that capacity and that knowledge and really people integrating that into their work to sit elsewhere. Currently, we staff a pilot initiative funded by the National Convergence Partnership of 6 communities across the country that are looking at the intersection between preventing violence and promoting healthier food and activity environments. And capacity building for these 6 sites has been one of the core elements that we've really stressed. We've brought these multi-sector collaboratives from these 6 communities together and allowed for both peer learning across communities, but also a real sort of intensive level of training and capacity building amongst those partners so that, you know, the people who are working on violence are thinking about their work in a new way. The people who are working on healthy eating and physical activity are thinking about their work in a different way, and really setting the stage that this work can continue even after the funding from Convergence Partnership ends. So we have here in front of you the tool. It's also available on our website. And also, if you give me your card after this session, I'd be happy to send it out to you. And one of the things that we normally do with this tool is often we use it when we're providing training and consultation. But we did want to make it available to you all if you'd like to use it separately. And, you know, we'd also be available to come in and work with you if you wanted to use it. But one of the ways it works is it really is just a conversation starter to sort of fill out the tool. And what can be really interesting is if you're filling it out with other people on your staff or with your partners, you can begin to see, well, maybe this isn't an asset we bring, but, you know, wow, health equity is really an asset that one of our other partners bring, or high-level leadership really sits with this partner. So it really begins the conversation about where are we really strong and what are the places that we really need to strengthen to be able to, one, make ourselves, you know, attractive to funders in order to do community prevention work, and 2, set the stage for us to do this work in the long term with or without, you know, large amounts of funding. And, you know, I just wanted to end by saying, through our work, we've really seen that there's a movement building around community prevention. We're seeing it all across the country, in rural areas, in urban areas, in the South, in the West, in the Northeast, in the Midwest, really across the country, across a range of different issues. People are really looking at how do we keep people from getting sick and injured in the first place, and how do we advance policies and organizational practices in order to do that. And I just wanted to end by saying, you know, the leadership of everyone here in this room, of the people that you work with at home, is so critical for us to continue to build this movement. I'm really proud to be a part of it, and I'm happy to also look at opportunities to work with all of you in the future so that we can all work together to advance prevention. I wanted to share with you just a couple Prevention Institute tools. Our textbook that we co-edited, just the second edition just came out and is available for purchase in the Josie Bass booth in the Expo Center. We have a number of tools on our website designed to help people work and advance community prevention, and I invite you to check out our website and take a look at them. And here's our contact information. If you give me your card at the end of the session, I'd love to sign you up for our e-alerts, which are infrequent. We won't flood your email inbox, but just to keep you up to date with what is happening across the country around prevention. Thank you so much for having me.